morning, Jamie Callister.
Good morning, David.
Jamie, now you are the grandson of Cyril Callister. I don't think you ever met Cyril, though.
No, I didn't.
But he did something that has changed the lives of people across this country. Explain to us how he came to invent Vegemite.
Well, he was a brilliant young scientist, and he was approached in the early 1920s by the Melbourne entrepreneur Fred Walker. And Fred had a specific task in mind, and he wanted him to come up with a yeast extract. So my grandfather went into a laboratory, and the factory people looked at him with a bit of disdain, thinking, what can a university man do that we can't? And in the course of the ensuing year, he came up with what we now know today as a Vegemite that we all love or love to hate.
Now, there's a description in your book, The True Story of the Man Who Invented an Australian Icon. Barrels of yeast arrived by truck from Abbotsford. That's in Melbourne, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Right. The stuff was pungent, brown and bitter. When the lids were lifted, the reek was ghastly, a demonic concoction of rotting compost and stale eggs. Yet, through some mysterious alchemy, some trick of science, Cyril was expected to transform this foul fungal mash into a flavoursome food product that Fred Walker could proudly sell to households across the nation. So, what was this stuff in the barrels?
Well, it was spent brewer's yeast, and it came predominantly from the CUB brewery in Melbourne, and it was it was so sought after they gave it away for free, and it stunk. And then he just got this brewer's yeast and thought, okay, here we go, I'll just have to experiment. And that's what he did during the course of the year, and he documented it meticulously, you know, trial and failure, and most of it in the early days was failure. And finally he came up with Vegemite at the end of the year.
Did it have any nutritional value at all?
Well, it did by the time he finished with it. It was really... I'm laughing because when it rolled off the production line in 1923, the head salesman, Billy Shannon, he couldn't stand the smell, let alone the taste. So I think my grandfather had a pretty big task ahead of him.
Because this is at a time, early 20th century, where we had products like Bovril and Bonox. Remember the old saying? I can remember
sure.
It as a boy, coffee, tea or Bonox.
Exactly.
So Bonox, does that fall into the same category of food product? It's... As Vegemite?
No, I think Bonox is a beef extract, whereas, you know, Vegemite is obviously a yeast extract, so they're different, but similar products in a way, but different. You know, one's a meat extract and the other one's a yeast extract, so,
right.
Yeah.
But they're both, to the uninitiated, to the person who's not used to eating this stuff, they can both seem equally blah. Marmite was distributed by Sanitarium. Was that being distributed at around the same time as your grandfather was working on Vegemite?
Well, it was, David, but you're talking about the First World War or the ensuing years afterwards. And during the First World War, the German U-boat fleet really disrupted the merchant shipping around the world. And obviously there was like food shortages. And then to compound the issue, you know, when the war finished in 1918, it wasn't long after that we went into another, like into a pandemic and that Spanish flu. So to answer the question, I mean, the Marmite was available and then all of a sudden it wasn't available. So that's where Fred Walker had the idea that he's going to come up with something to rival it and if not better it.
Okay. See, I can honestly say I have never tried Marmite. I'm a loyal Vegemite eater. There we are.
Well, that's good to hear.
How did we get to this, though, Cyril? Because when your grandfather finally came up with Vegemite and he says to Mr. Fred Walker, the guy who owns the company who's employing him to come up with this thing, he said, right, I've got it, Fred. It works. And let's put it on people's on shelves. This thing is going to sell like hotcakes or it's going to sell like Marmite. But it didn't. Nobody wanted to buy it.
No, and that's the extraordinary thing about it. I mean, when it rolled off the production line in 1923, I mean, there was a stage where my grandfather said to a young kid, you know, a boy of 17 that he'd employed coincidentally after he knocked at the factory door every day for a month. He said to him, he said, Theo, look, we might be looking for a new job next week, because there was just piling up these jars, just kept on coming back to the factory.
So how did he crack it? I mean, how did you go from a product that, you know, because you almost have to train your customers to get their heads around this product and start using it. Or did he change the product, or was it branding? They did try to change the name for a while. They tried Parwell.
They did. They tried everything. I mean, they tried changing the name to Parwell, and that was just a corny play on words. If Marmite, well, then Parwell. It's so bad. I'd like to think that my grandfather didn't have a hand in that, that it was one of the marketing guys. But no, to answer the question, he couldn't get rid of it. And then Fred thought, well, look, they're just sort of like by the mid-20s, they'd got into processing cheese. Now, my grandfather was a food scientist, so he'd come up with a method for processing cheese, only to find that a guy in the States had already patented one, James Kraft. So he sent Fred over there to talk to him. Anyway, the Kraft Walker Cheese Company was born. And then Fred, in a stroke of genius, really, decided, well, look, if we can't sell Vegemite, let's give it away with the cheese. So he gave a small jar away with every block of cheese.
Of course.
Yeah, so that was the turning point. I mean, and people, as I said before, like after the First World War and with the austerity, they were loath to throw anything out. So they started to try it, and obviously they fell in love with it.
Right.
So albeit slowly.
So it was the cheese that people wanted, and Fred Walker, the owner of the company, had cut this deal with Kraft because he went across to the US. This is all in your book, The True Story of the Man Who Invented an Australian Icon. He goes across and he sees what Kraft are doing, and he said, look, let's cut a deal. I'll get into business. So he's selling the cheese. That is selling like hotcakes. And he gives away the Vegemite. What a brilliant idea.
I know, it was fantastic. And that's the thing. I mean, and that's the whole thing about the story. I mean, it's more than just a story about a product. It's a great story that intersects with some of the great personalities and events of the 20th century. I couldn't believe it when they're over in Chicago in the roaring 20s, cutting a deal with James Kraft, and the gangsters are shooting the joint up, you know, the birthplace of the drive-by shooting, and they're over there.
But it also gives a lovely practical example of what was going on at a much bigger level. You know, if you pull back and take a bird's eye view of this, you've got big companies setting up in Australia like Holden's or I can't think of another one. But your grandfather was working for Fred Walker, who was doing it with food processing, but other areas of mass production were coming to Australia via these big corporations.
That's exactly right. And then the other thing conspiring to help Vegemite along the way was the introduction of the American ad men. And they came in droves in the 20s, like you had, like in Kraft's case, the J. Walter Thompson advertising agency that took over their account. And then they just started to make these great ads, and they'd make the most outrageous claims about its properties. You know, it could give you nerves of steel and anything else. And it was, you know, it would almost make you indestructible. And so I'm sure that helped.
Well, I was going to ask you, was there an element of the tonic about Vegemite?
Well, I think most definitely. And, you know, all jokes aside, I think my grandfather was really across the fact that it was high in vitamin B. And in fact, he sent a sample to an eccentric professor, Plimmer, at St. Thomas's Medical School in London. And Plimmer had an ailing loft of pigeons above his flat in London, and he tried them. I tried Vegemite on them for the period of a month, and he wrote the most beautiful letter back to my grandfather saying, look, I've tried Vegemite on the pigeons that had polyneuritis, which is like beriberi in humans, and they've been cured, but please don't use any of this information in any of your advertising.
Well, we've got one listener who says, Vegemite saved my daughter's life. She was diagnosed with Addison's, but prior to that, she would eat spoonfuls and spoonfuls of Vegemite. Thanks, Vegemite, you saved my daughter's life. Now, I don't know if that's right, but that's what Michelle believes. So there are people who love their Vegemite.
Oh, gosh, well, that's the first time I've heard that one. I heard of a dairy farmer that fed it to an ailing cow or whatever, or calf, and then same thing, had a miraculous recovery. So I'm sure, look, it is rich in vitamin B, so there's no doubt about it that, okay, you know, it is good for you.
Well, just to finish up, you brought your grandfather along, Cyril, who was actually the chemist who made this, and he made it for Fred Walker, who was the guy that would bring Kraft to Australia, Kraft cheese. Because you never got to get to know him, Jamie, you came across this story gradually. I mean, you'd be eating your toast as a boy at the table with some Vegemite, and your dad would say, you know, your grandfather invented that. But is that – so for you, it was a very personal journey.
It was a very personal journey, and that's exactly right. I mean, Dad just said to us one morning that, you know, the old man invented Vegemite and had a hand in processed cheese, and we sort of looked at Mum to see if he was pulling our leg or not, and then obviously it was true. So as we went, you know, as I grew older, I'd, you know, tell the occasional person from time to time, and they were always fascinated. And then one day Dad came to me when he was getting on, and he said, if people come asking about the old man, I'll put them on to you. And that's when I really had a panic attack. I thought, God, what am I going to say?
Well, you don't. So what do
I
you
went
know?
Back to a, well, that's exactly right. I mean, and then I went back to old boxes of letters that we had and we'd carted around as kids. And then I found the most remarkable story. And, you know, it's just an incredible story. I mean, the fact that he had to get scholarships to get to further education and get to Melbourne Uni. And then he enlisted in the First World War with his older brother. And, you know, then he was dramatically withdrawn from the armed forces and sent overseas to make munitions. So it is a fascinating story, but I did really get to know him through these old letters and then talking to colleagues and family and friends.
Well, if you're interested in history, if you're interested in Australian history, but you'd like to see it in a quirky way through the really this one family, the Callisters, and in particular Cyril Callister, it's more than a book about a jar of paste. It's called The True Story of the Man Who Invented an Australian Icon. Jamie, thank you for bringing your grandfather.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Good on you, Jamie. Jamie Callister, author of The True Story of the Man Who Invented an Australian Icon. And let me tell you who published that. It's published by Murdoch Books. And it's a very easy book to read.